Oh,
You all right?
I played squash this morning for the first time in 2 months, over 2 months, I think.
Wow.
I'm feeling just about okay at the moment, but I just need to know your availability to do a funeral next week.
Yes, mate. For friends, and you know you're going to get that 5% discount, don't you?
Oh, so kind, so kind. What?
Sorry, I was just waking you up before you did the intro. Carry on.
Oh, okay. Welcome, everybody, to episode 308. This is what I sound like when I've just woken up, all right? It's your own fault.
Okay.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 308 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there is Joe Davis.
Hello. See?
There we go.
High energy. There it is.
That wasn't high energy, was it?
It was quite high energy.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, yes, here we are. Yes, I'm aching a bit, but I'll come on to that. Anyway, church notices? I don't think there are any, are
No,
there?
I don't think so. No, no.
And no matters arising or any other business?
I think we can skip straight to the main agenda.
Oh, good. Okay. It's nice to know we've got one.
Or the hidden agenda.
So how are you? I mean, it's how we normally start this charade.
Do you know, good. I was at Western Burt Arboretum.
Oh, wow.
What a great place. Yeah, I mean, it's coming to the end, but beautiful. Just the colours are still stunning. And yeah.
That's a long way for you, isn't it?
Well, it was on the way for Sophie's birthday celebration.
Ah,
so
okay.
In Bristol.
Okay,
so,
great.
Yeah, okay.
Over in Gloucester.
It was quite funny, actually. She decided what I want for my birthday in November is a picnic.
Right
in Western Burt Arboretum. So we sort of dragged these trolleys on wheels for about a mile into the heart of the Arboretum to a place. Anyway, it is what it is. It was a beautiful day.
And how's the hypothermia? Is
that good? Yes, it's okay.
Actually, it's been quite mild, really, hasn't it? It's been not bad. It's turning a bit now.
The cold weather's coming, though. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
This Saturday, I'm filming again for this pilot.
Oh, okay.
You know, so-called TV, whatever it is, show, program, series, who knows? Something to do with spirituality in the 21st century. We'll work out the title of it when we get there. But
okay.
Yeah, so filming that and filming actually with a podcast listener as well. So that's quite exciting on Saturday. And planning to go see Paddington 3. But here, I'm a bit nervous about it.
Mm.
I mean, Paddington 2 is pretty much the perfect film. So my fear is that it can only go one way. But
yeah,
still Paddington, and that's good. But yeah, I shall report back next week. But no,
yes.
All is well. Busy this week. Very quiet next week. And that's the way it goes.
Hmm.
Yeah. How about you, my friend? What's going on?
Well, talking of films, I watched Deadpool 3 last night with my daughter, which is...
That's a funny film.
It's very funny. It's a bit kind of... I mean, I like a film with a cameo.
Mm.
But when there were like about 400 cameos in, you start to think, okay, you might have gone a bit overboard here. But it was quite good. It was quite fun. As I said, I played squash for the first time in 2 months this morning. And yeah, that's hard.
Well, you're no spring chicken. We've talked about this, haven't we?
This is true. Thank you. This is true. I am, in fact, some kind of old wizened turkey. But anyway, you know. I'll pay for that in a couple of days' time. Oh, and here's what I'm doing over the weekend. I'm putting up a potting shed.
So is this replacing the shed or is this another shed? Are you in fact Nick Two Sheds Page?
No. Well, you know, the shed of the book, obviously. Well, that's gone. That was back in my old house. So that we had to leave that one behind.
Of course, yeah.
We had a shed here, which I don't think so much was a shed as a sort of colander, really. It was allowing a lot of water. It was a sieve, in a way. I knocked that down last week, which was quite cathartic. Built a base and putting up a potting shed, which Claire wants. It's for Claire, really. And I think by potting she means putting up plants, unless she's going to go in there and smoke stuff. I don't know, really. It depends what kind of plants she grows in there. Really.
You know, Claire.
I know, she's such a hippie. Anyway, yeah, and it's beginning to feel a bit wintry, isn't it? I think it's turning.
It is feeling wintry. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
there's a sort of cold west wind. And
welcome, international listeners, to the two Brits talking about the weather. Who knew?
Well, we talk about it because we get such a big variety of it, don't we? Yes, really,
we do get some weather. Yes.
Anyway, shall we go straight on to feedback?
Yeah, because we've had some great feedback recently. Mm. But I do want a shout out to Steve. He says, "Well, he's been a Christian for 50 years and sort of discovered the podcast, and he's enjoying it." That's a summary of Steve. Steve, welcome aboard. And then we had this in from Leslie in Oz. She says, "Hello, Joe and Nick. Thank you for your timely interview with Sean Lambert on mindfulness." She says, "I've been trying to reduce time spent on Instagram without much success. I felt like I knew more about virtual strangers than my actual neighbours. That vicarious living is not really living at all. And doom scrolling was not great for my mental health either." The quote, not attributed, but possibly by Johan Hari, who wrote Stolen Focus, "Freeing our attentional capacities from the virtual world is the number one ethical task," was the push I needed to go cold turkey and delete all the apps. She then heartily recommends the book Love's Braided Dance, Hope in a Time of Crisis by Norma Wurzburg. But that's great. And she loves the idea of the home group, which we didn't announce in the church notices, but obviously coming soon. To a house near you.
Anyway.
She wrote a longer email, but thank you, Les. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting quote. That's one that leapt out to me. And obviously, this is something I've thought about for years. Another book I'd recommend on it is Jaron Lanier's book, 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now.
Oh, really?
Which is a kind of a book that does exactly what it says on the tin, basically.
Yeah, sure.
And that was written some time back. And that's a real eye-opener. I think the interesting thing about that ethical aspect now is because actually I think it's true. I think it's more an ethical question than ever, because it's not just about what it's doing to you, I think, these social media feeds. It's about what they now represent, who they are aligned with, what kind of powers they're aligned with, you know. And I'm reading a lot about people who are detaching themselves and trying to find different ways to navigate the internet, as it were. You know, how do we detach from Google? How do we detach from Amazon? All these big businesses are not in it for you. You know,
they're not.
Stop that some time back. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that I heard mentioned on a podcast this week, which they set up some very innocuous accounts on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter. And they ticked non-political. They weren't interested in political. But it took hardly any time at all before their feed was swamped with political ads or political content.
Interesting, isn't it?
So, you know, the algorithm ignores you. The algorithm wants to feed you this content, whether you want it or not.
Yes, yeah.
So I think, yeah, there's lots of alternatives now about how you can go about things and how you can do stuff. And I do think it's quite hopeful, actually. You know, I was saying in a couple of podcasts ago, I've started blogging again. And I think there's lots of stuff. You know, blogs, I think, are ripe for a comeback because they're about real people's opinions. You know, they're not, you know, they don't have to be fed to you by an algorithm. You can go and find them. But so I think the ethics there is it's not about whether or not it's doing you good in your mental health. It's about whether or not the organisation, the company behind it, is a good thing to be giving your attention and your time to.
Yes, I quite agree. And you know, I've noticed with some of my friends on Facebook, which is the only real one I'm on, I see them reposting these, to my way of thinking, you know, offensive or shocking posts. And I never comment on them anymore. I never say anything because I realise if I say anything, I'm just drawn in like a pawn in a game to this kind of outrage kind of system that has developed now. They either want you to absolutely love something or absolutely hate it or be deeply offended by it. And that's how, you know, the business model works. And so now I'm sitting back. I still post my pictures of sunsets and boring stuff like that, but
yes,
you'll not see any political posts or anything like that ever again on my feed. Not that I did many, I hasten to add, back in the day.
No, and I think the thing is now it's very important for us to find out what we can change. Because I remember having conversations back when the web was young and when social media was just coming online, and it was already, you know, you were aware that it was a very argumentative space. And I remember having conversations with people and people saying to me, yeah, but I want to be in there. I want to, you know, feel it's important for me to be in there so I can change opinions. We can change. And you can't. I don't think you can change it. I don't think that's a great... Arguing on the internet is hopeless, really. And so I think for me it's about what can I actually change? Where can I bring change?
Yeah.
Where should I put my energies?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's it, really. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, staying on a sort of related theme, really, Margot from Canada wrote in and said about the need for peace. And she said one of the best questions this week for me was, what transcends an election for you, and what steps can you take to keep the main thing the main thing?
Yeah.
And she says, I actually responded to that question, and just doing so shifted anxiety in me. My list included singing in our choir, lunch with a friend, sitting with a dying 90-year-old lifelong friend holding his hand, reading Beatrix Potter to my grandchild, watching the Canada geese figure things out, discussing a great book with my book club, making a meal with my husband of 39 years, and yes, baking a cake. She said, the deep joy that comes from these human, loving, generative activities is defiant against the powers of darkness to overwhelm us. I feel less whelmed, for real. She says, I hope you have a lovely week and keep on making a smile with your laughter. And that's from Margot. And she did send in a picture of the cake, and it looked wonderful.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's reality. Those are the things you can change.
Absolutely.
You know.
And that's a great list of tips for listeners, you know. And also, isn't there something about baking and things? I mean, we're amidst the Great British Bake Off, as you know. I think we're heading towards the semi-finals at this exciting time. But there's something about baking a cake that is so great. I love it.
Yes.
If I do say so myself, I baked a pretty good lemon drizzle the other week.
Did
you? Yes, I did. Yeah.
Is that your favourite? What's your favourite cake? I think this is a very important question, actually.
I don't make that. But I tell you what, well, as Christmas approaches, two things really come into the shops that aren't in the shops all year, and I never understand why. Panettone. Who doesn't love panettone? And, you know, a certain spot. I mean, obviously, we're not going to advertise Waitrose on this podcast, but they do a chocolate panettone. They also do a limoncello panettone. Oh. Come on! Mm. And Stollen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know marzipan can be a little bit controversial for some people. I love marzipan. And, you know, that's... I mean, this is living, friends. Fill your Facebook feeds with pictures of panettone and Stollen. That's what I say.
Yeah, I love that you're bringing the controversial marzipan question into this podcast.
I know, the marzipan dilemma. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're nothing if not an edgy podcast, are we, really?
Okay, Roz from Oz. She doesn't describe herself as Roz from Oz. I describe Roz as from Oz.
I expect she's grateful for that.
I'm sure she is. Well, it's just pleasing alliteration. What can I say? Dear Joe, in the wake of US elections, I also resolved this week to instead intentionally choose kindness. All I can do is to make my bit of the world nicer. It was so good to hear Nick say similar things, except I'd rather listen to Coldplay, not Mozart. Amen to that, Ross.
Fair enough.
Theologically, I'm learning to enjoy the grey. Here's an example. I've had some significant health issues this past month. It's a situation where I could have found comfort in prayer. I missed the cheery all things work together for good mantra of my Sunday school faith days. Then I thought, what the heck? I'll just pray anyway. I can be an optimist without magical thinking. It's not like I expect anything to happen in an interventionist way, but as a way of sidelining my anxiety. The mindfulness practice of sending good wishes to yourself, like may you be happy, may you be well, is similar. For me, prayer is more meaningful. Another example, she said, is saying grace before dinner. To me, it's a moment of quiet gratefulness and I enjoy my meal more. It's a ritual and there is value in that. Well, I like that. Thank you, Roz.
Yeah.
That's good. I still haven't really resolved the grace thing with other people. I know you're very good on this. We've talked about it before. I kind of get there's an embarrassment and there's a whole kind of, you know, there's this triggering for me of ministerial days. Now the expert in prayer will now lead us in grace. Yeah. Please, Joe, say a wonderful grace that is going to bless this meal.
But I think there's ways of doing it that are natural and easy. And it depends who I'm with. You know, if I'm with people I don't know very well, I wouldn't suddenly say grace. Yeah. But if I'm with friends who I know follow Jesus and we're together in a pub or something having a meal, I'll say grace there. Yeah. I'll just give thanks because it's being thankful.
Oh, it's good. I agree.
You know, and I think sometimes if you feel awkward about it, I think you, Joe, particularly could lean into that moment and shout, adopt prayer positions and just, you know, go for it.
We have done all those things.
Yeah, exactly.
But I am always grateful for food, so it just makes sense, doesn't it?
But I did like that phrase in there, what the heck, I'll just pray anyway.
That's
I feel that's like that is a kind of mid-faith crisis attitude to prayer, I think. I'll just pray anyway.
I do like that. Thank you, Ros. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, Stuart said, hi, Nick and Joe. Pardon the lack of pith. Actually, it was quite a pithy email, to be fair. He says, California has been fully inoculated against brevity. Anyway, he says... He says, I found myself counselling a wonderful woman who is expressing pure horror at the prospects of the incoming administration. He says, some of the inner workings of American politics needs to be understood. We elect the entire House of Representatives every 2 years. We have the opportunity to speak again. Also, one third of the Senate will be on the ballot. He said, the mission of the church has not changed. Feed the hungry, comfort the bereaved, pray for the afflicted, seek justice, do mercy, be a light and blessing to our dark and confused society. He said, I love the candor of the podcast. Keep on visiting old churches and rhapsodizing over obscure cheeses. God bless, Stuart.
Excellent.
So thank you, Stuart. I think the voice of reason in these troubling times.
Well, I like the last bit. I think we should at some point plan a summer sort of podcast where we actually go into an old church and eat obscure cheese. How does that sound?
Do you know what? That is a brilliant idea. One of the proudest things of my life was one of the first events we did. Do you remember we went to Minsmere? We stayed there and we said the criteria for coming are birds, real ales, and spirituality. And if you're interested in those three things, then you're going to love this weekend. And we met. Well, I think there's another one now, isn't there? There could be one. Like, if you love cheese and you love old, boring churches.
If you love Jesus and you love Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Come anyway, God. Let's move
but
on.
But I do think that's good. You know, I've written recently about the early church, strangely for me. But, you know, one of the things about the early church is they didn't really have power to change anything. They had no political power. They had no economic power, no social power. They had nothing. So what did they do? They just did the things that your disciple was supposed to do. The historian Alan Crider calls it habitus. They had a set of habits. They just did. What does Stuart say here? You know, feed the hungry, comfort the bereaved, pray for the afflicted.
Yes.
Seek justice. These are the habits that you get in. So times you're going to have to be patient. Times you're going to be powerless. But you carry on doing the Jesus stuff. Whatever. You know, great stuff, Stuart. Thank you.
Well, I like that. Thank you. Jenny said, as she said, amusingly for me, she says, I will try to pith. Well, Jenny, thank you. I love your pith. She says, I found myself laughing in the car last week when I went into autopilot and prayed for parking space. She said, I was on my way to a job interview and traffic was heavier than sat-nav had suggested. Laughing about it and the sense of the ridiculous eased my anxiety and I ended up praying in a more genuine way. When I got there with 10 minutes or so to spare, there were plenty of spaces and therefore there had been no reason to pray. Perhaps, she says, praying for car parking spaces is less about the response from God and more about giving him our anxious thoughts and establishing a relationship with a supernatural being. I'm sure there's some maxim about prayer changing us. I can totally believe that God doesn't care one jot about where I park my car, within reason, but can believe in a God who cares about my mental well-being. Now, there's an interesting thought from Jenny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, I wonder what you think of that?
Well, you know, what the heck, pray anyway.
Is
what I think, you know. But I think I like that idea of prayer and laughter, actually.
I
think that we get terribly po-faced about prayer and you know, and we talk about it as though it's a conversation. So, you know, but we don't actually have that conversation in any conversational way. You know, we're not honest. I remember being at Scargill, actually, Scargill House with Adrian Plass and a friend of mine. And very funny man, and he stood up in the chapel at Scargill. He was leading the service, and he literally stood up to lead prayers, and he said, "Lord, you know, I sometimes wonder why we even do this." You know?
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Well, I've been with you, and you've led prayers like that, where everyone's been rolling around the floor laughing, well, and I do think there's something wonderful about it. I used to pray in an outrageous French accent
reason. Well, you know, the thing is, if it is talking with friends with God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I think humour can play a part of that. And if it leads us to laugh at ourselves and our own needs or whatever, that's good. But also, I think that's a key thing. Prayer is not just about what we pray for. It's about the act of praying. I heard a talk from a guy this week who has spent 40 years working with the persecuted church. And he was talking about a Chinese pastor he talked to. And he said, you know, why do you want people to pray for you? And you kind of expect that it's going to be, well, because, you know, the power of God will work miracles and we need all the support we can get, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, because basically it'll do them good, won't it? You know, if they pray, it does them great. Good. They receive a blessing, but it's by praying.
I like that.
And you think, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
That is good. Yeah. Okay, right, Tim. So we're ploughing through these because there's a lot to get through and I want to get to one in particular by the end. And Tim says, hi, Joe and Nick. He says, at first I didn't get the microphone in my heart metaphor. It then dawned on me that the tool we used to use for transmitting our requests to God started to talk back. Counter to what the awesome Nick says, I don't consider myself to be creative. However, I am generative. I know how to get stuff done. I like the idea of being generative with God. And then he says the final thing, Martin Joseph was the reason this all started for me. It was at Greenbelt 1980-something, listening to him on the main stage, that I decided there was something in this faith thing. He says, keep on keeping on, cheese. So there cheese. We go. Cheese. Yeah, that was the sign off. Cheese.
Did he signed off the email, just cheese.
Yeah, he did, with an exclamation mark, which I quite liked.
I suggest you start using that from now on. You know what? Letters.
I love cheese. And now I really want to eat some, don't you? Wouldn't you love a bit of cheese now?
Joe, I want to be a friend to you. And I say, yes, you love cheese, but really, does it love you back?
It does.
Really? I'm not sure. I think you might be in, I don't want to say an abusive relationship, but I think it's asymmetrical, I think is the word.
There's an argument. It could kill me.
I just don't want to see you trapped in this.
I love cheese, but can we get back to the point, Tim?
Yes, indeed. Cheese. Thank you, Tim, for that. I know, you know, you're a lovely man, but I want to rebuke you because genuinely believe everyone is creative. I think this is the thing. People say I'm not creative because they're actually looking at a limited palette of what creativity is. For example, if you are good at getting things done, you're probably good at problem solving. If you're good at problem solving, you're going to be creative.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the nature of it.
Yeah.
And I learned about this because, you know, I've been sort of getting into railway modelling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so you end up going to some shows, right? And model railway shows.
As if old churches weren't enough. Sorry, do carry on.
But you go to these shows and you look around and you think, well, there's a specific demographic of people here.
Yes. Do tell us about that demographic.
Well, largely male, largely retired.
Bearded, I'm going to say.
Not massively bearded. Okay. Some are genuinely massively bearded. But no, I would say sort of introverted, you know, on possibly on all kinds of spectrum. Who knows? But anyway, the thing is, what I realised about them is they make these wonderful sort of layouts. And they've all got a backstory. All these layouts have a backstory about what it is, what they've created, what type of place it is. And I realised that this is a way for them to tell a story. Mm. This is actually a way for them to be creative. Sometimes it's a story about their past, about what the trains they could remember. I thought, what a wonderful thing this is. People are to find a way to tell stories.
Yeah.
In you know, even in those kinds of ways. So I think, you know, we're creative because we're made in the Creator's image. Full stop.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I knew you would say that because, yeah, it does seem to be the deal. We are creative people. Tim seemed to enjoy generative more. That's all. Yeah, great.
I mean, of course he's creative. He ended his emails with just cheese.
Yeah, exactly. That's a creative act. Yeah.
It is.
He's been hoisted by his own petard.
Yes.
Okay, right. Okay, so this is from Nick. And he says, "Dear Joe and Nick, blah, 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 being generally lovely about us." I've said that because I know you'd edit it out. He says, "For most of my life, I've been part of a charismatic evangelical tradition which has cited the Bible as the exact word of God, and where all around me are confident that God has a plan for us, speaks to us, and intervenes miraculously from some of the time. He says, I've therefore had to join the mental gymnastics required to attempt to maintain a mindset that accepts the contradictions that this naturally brings. There is a blatant contradiction inherent in the commonly held fundamental beliefs that God is all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful, yet rarely steps in to make things right when things are going very wrong. Several years ago, I read an interesting interpretation of a good tree bears good fruit and a bad tree bears bad fruit, which is from Matthew 7. The simple idea is that you can apply this like a test to a theological belief, i.e. what is the fruit of your belief? I realised that the fruit of believing God would answer prayers miraculously had led a lot of the time to frustration, doubt, confusion, and frankly often denial. Trying to come up with very convincing reasons as to why the vast majority of specific prayers are not answered. This led me to try out a completely new mindset to see what fruit it would bear. The mindset that God is non-interventionist, i.e. that God doesn't, or maybe can't, to reference Thomas Ord, intervene supernaturally at all. The outcome for me has been a wonderful, freeing and positive experience." And he goes on from there to talk about that now he's free to sort of stop worrying and justifying and coming up with convincing reasons for kind of God's absence. But, you know, focusing far more on becoming more like Jesus and appreciating that the divine is in all things. And he says, "In summary, for me, the theology of an interventionist God produced fruit that was often more about confusion, frustration and doubt, whereas the theology of a non-interventionist God has released me from all the complex false expectations and opened up fresh opportunities for a life with and in the divine. I genuinely recognise and am happy to accept that I am completely wrong, but if others have also had years of trying to believe in an interventionist God and they see in themselves the potential bad fruit that this may have produced for them, then it might be worth just trying out a different mindset to see where it leads." And that's from Nick. Thank you, Nick. That's a really interesting email, isn't it? So judging your beliefs by their fruit.
Yes, I think it's, in that sense, you know, we've often talked about it, haven't we? We've talked about, you know, people argue a lot about what each other believes on certain theological points. Like, well, are you a creationist? Are you a sort of not evolutionist or whatever? Well, the issue there is really what fruit does it produce to me? You know, I don't mind if, in a way if you believe God created the world in 6 days. I do mind if it makes you sort of narrow-minded and want to exclude all kinds of people, or want to build bad theologies on it, and vice versa. The same for people who take Genesis as a myth than reality. The same is true there. I suppose the difficulty with this approach, or one of the potential difficulties with this approach, is that I would say is struggle, frustration, and doubt necessarily bad fruit?
Ah, okay. Say more about that.
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking aloud, really. But I think it's easy to say, well, I'm just going to gesture in this bit because it's causing me all this debate. But maybe the debate is a thing that you've got to go through. Maybe that's an important thing to wrestle with. Yeah. I think there are times for decluttering. There are times for letting go of things that are weighing us down. And, you know, I'm not going to gainsay Nick and, you know, you do you. But, you know, there are times for this. But there are also times for wrestling with God and for going, look, I really want to, I don't want to easily give up on this. I want to work it out. Now, I think that what Nick seems to be saying is if that struggle is actually bad for you, you know, if it causes you dissonance, if it causes you pain, then probably the best thing to do is to just detach yourself from that. But I think it's about recognizing what the fruit is doing, what nourishment it's giving you in that sense. Yeah. You know, is it good fruit or bad fruit? So fruit might look bad from the outside. I'm really getting lost in the fruit metaphor here.
Yes, but, you've really got it.
It might look odd. It might look difficult, but it might actually be doing you good to struggle in that sense. That's all I'm saying on that. It's a minor point, really.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think this is always where the rubber hits the road. And I remember the debate over the whole, same-sex thing some years ago. I mean, not that that debate is over, and I know it still rambles on, but I remember watching these debates. So you had the very pro inclusion, openness on one side, and you had the very kind of die-hard kind of, no, the Bible says this, there's no deviation from this, this is God's authority and word, and there's no sort of contextual or context in which we can read it any differently. And I remember thinking at that point, if you took the whole debate away, I'd rather be like those people who were being gracious and kind and loving and respectful to their opponents. And I'm not going to say which ones they were, obviously, than those who were like so inflexible and actually very unkind in their presentation of their views and everything. And there's something about, isn't there? When you talk about God, you've got to realise you're just using words, even interventionist or non-interventionist, as I think we were hinting at last week, well, really is a slightly false binary, because you're using very human kind of concepts and then you're trying to apply them to the divine, which is a pretty tricky thing to do. All we've got is words, so we've got to use words. But I think, as always, we have to recognise the limitation of words when it comes to describing the divine.
I absolutely agree. You're always dealing with sort of metaphor and uncertainty. And I think, I've said this before, a lot of church history, theological history, is about people hating each other because they don't quite misunderstand things in the same way that I misunderstand them. Yeah. You know, it's like you're always sort of grasping partially at truth with these issues, and then you get terribly doctrinaire because somebody else is vague in a different way. Yeah. And where I think that Nick is right is that it's always good, I think, to look at, you know, the fruit of our beliefs and what they're actually doing, how they are being expressed.
Yeah.
Because I think if your beliefs lead you to lie, then there's something wrong. Yeah. You know, if they lead you to hate, then there is something wrong.
Yes, yeah.
If your beliefs, whatever they are, your theological beliefs, lead you in a way that is different to Jesus, then might want to look at the fruit there, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was a brilliant email. Nick, thank you. And thank you, everyone, who's just written in such thoughtful, inspiring, thought-provoking emails. It's fantastic. Please keep them coming. Joe@midfaithcrisis.com. Now, listen, before we sign off, I want to remind you that last week you did mention that you'd been on retreat.
Mm.
So I just wondered and you had a few things to say about that. So we got time to do that?
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, it sort of ties into the hearing from God, interventionist God thing. So a couple of weeks ago, I went on a quiet day. And you know how it is, you go with all these things in your mind you want to get sorted out and activities you take. One of the things I took with me was a journal. I keep a journal, but I've been very bad at keeping a journal last year. I say bad, I'm not punishing myself. You know, there have been times in my life when I've kept a daily journal. You know, I did that for like 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And then more recently, the last sort of 18 months, it's been very, very sporadic. Just kept this journal. One of the things I did was I started reading what I'd written at previous retreats.
I do that on retreats. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, because it shows you a sort of, you know, temperature chart of where you've been, or, you know, kind of a progress report. Only what I realised, there was no progress at all. It was a complete whinge fest. It was absolute.
I know what you're saying.
I thought, you are just, this is the same thing you've been going on about. You know, I'd started writing. So the funny thing is, I'd started writing an entry, and then I thought, I'll look back. And I'd written virtually exactly the same thing. I mean, I'd written 18 months ago. It was just an entry after entry, the same stuff. And I thought, well, this is what I've got to pray about now. I've got to pray about this stuff, about this lack of progress. And then I realised that sitting there in the room, I thought, I can't pray. I don't know how to pray. I don't know how to do it. It was like I'd lost the skill.
Did you receive the gift of tongues at that point?
I didn't, Joe, I'm afraid.
Sorry you're not holy enough for that.
I know. I did fall over quite a lot, but I think that was just old age. I don't think I was slain.
You've been playing squash.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just vertigo. But anyway, so what I thought is I'll go and walk. I'll go out for a walk.
Yeah.
And I'll just talk. And I'll see what happens. Yeah. And I went out for a walk, and I genuinely believe that God spoke to me.
Okay.
And it comes back again to laughter, I think, a bit, because I just started laughing, because I just, the message, and it's a very deep spiritual message that I felt God give to me in that walk, was, it just said, get over yourself.
Well, I thought it was going to be, Nick Page, you are such a...
Well, it was... Fortunately, he doesn't use your robust language, but it was along those lines. Absolutely clearly out of the blue, this thing was, just get over yourself. Yeah. Just stop it. You know, this... Yeah. Now, is it God saying that? Is it me responding to the journal?
Is it projection?
Is it projection? We'll is never it just know. Common sense? Is it just sort of, reflective practice? Yes, I think it's all those things.
But also, here's what I think is a cast iron test of whether it's... What was the tone? If it was like condemnatory, I don't think it is. But I think if it was done with that loving, playful voice...
No, I wasn't. I didn't feel condemned at all. I felt sort of seen, as it were. I saw myself. This is that. So this is why it's mixed up, because you feel like it's a bit of both things. But I think it shows the real power of keeping a journal, actually, that you can look back at yourself. And if you look back at yourself with compassion and you look back at yourself with that sense of humour and humanity, and you invite God into that process, then I think things will be revealed that are helpful. And I have genuinely felt lighter and better since that retreat. I genuinely feel it's made this change. And I have generally tried to... practice acceptance and thankfulness to a greater degree than I was, and that's my kind of experience. I found it very, very profound. And there were other things that happened that were really powerful as well, which I don't feel able to talk about on this podcast, because maybe I'll talk about them sometime in the future. But you know, it was a really brilliant time. But I genuinely felt that I heard something from outside myself, which is helpful, was wonderful.
I mean, I do think you know the voice of God, if I can put it those words, by the tonality.
Right.
I think the mystics would echo this. You know, they say that they go out in search of God and they discover a lover, don't they? And I think that for me, the voice of God has never been harsh, judgy, you know, angry. It's always been compassionate and loving. And I also think that, you know, by being compassionate, looking at yourself through the years and being compassionate on yourself, that's how compassion for others starts. I'm not sure that you can ever do compassion for others from any real depth of motive unless you're compassionate to yourself, unless you understand how this whole thing runs on compassion and love in some ways.
Yeah. Which means, because it doesn't mean that you can't have tough things come into your mind, and, you know, quite honest things and open things. You know, my wife always says about the Gospels that, you know, when you get to some of those tough sayings of Jesus, she says the big thing is we can't see the look in his eyes. We don't know what attitude he was saying this. On the printed page, they come across quite tough, but you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure if people heard our conversations to each other... You know, if they just read a transcript of them, which I pray will never happen in any, you know, if you're bugging these conversations, please never do that. You know, I just pray that nobody ever has to read that. But you know, it would come over. People would think, my goodness, they're so rude to one another. They can't possibly love one another.
Well, listen, you know. I feel bad for calling you now, but listen, for the record, let me say you are one of the loveliest I know.
All you're doing now is you're giving me more to bleep. It's awful. I've got to do all the bongoing now.
It's true, though.
Honestly.
It's true.
Well,
thank
you. You're a lovely
man. You are.
Oh, bless you. Well, you know, That's all I've got. So it's not a sort of earth-shattering thing, but I felt really blessed, actually. I felt really thankful for that experience.
So what would you say to the listeners, all 17 of them out there, who are thinking, journaling, not journaling, retreats, not retreats? What's the words of wisdom?
Right. Well, firstly, by journaling, I don't mean you have to keep a sort of daily record or you have to write deep, profound thoughts. It could be as simple as keeping a kind of spiritual measure of how you're feeling. You could do it in emojis if you want. I don't care. You know, you could just say, how am I? Because I think that the thing about it is keeping a record helps you see the patterns in your life. Yeah. Helps you identify what's causing these issues. Until you've got that sort of data, if you want, spiritual data to help you. I think the other thing is that actually when you journal, sometimes you write things you weren't expecting to. And that's where the creativity bit comes in that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, these thoughts come and that's a way of hearing from God. But you don't have to do that. You could draw a picture. You could do anything.
Yeah.
I think keeping some kind of record of your spiritual life is probably a good thing. And retreats, well, you know, again, people tend to think of them in certain terms, but I think quiet days are really good.
Yeah.
It comes back to the early email about detaching yourself from, you know, the ethical demands of detaching yourself from social media, because spending time in quiet, spending time away from the distractions and the anxieties and the relentless fear-mongering of the world, I think is got to be a good thing for
people. Yeah, great. Thank you.
But you can do it anyway. I mean, you in essence, you have a daily habit of retreat or quite often when you go to the pier, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. But I do think there's something to be said for going away from your normal environment, you know, just away from the distractions of home and all that means. Taking yourself out intentionally.
Yes.
Just for time with you and the divine and, you know, bravely switching the phone off, you know, and the panic that often... You know, sometimes I feel if I'm separated from my phone, you know, is a signal in itself that it's time to be separate from my phone.
Well, I think it's certainly time to be separate from us. Yes. So we should really wrap this up. Well, maybe we'll say more about retreat next week or something like that. But
yeah,
we should wrap this up. So thank you to everyone who wrote in this week.
Yes, thank you so much. Really good stuff. Yeah.
If you want to write in on anything, send your email to
joe@midfaithcrisis.org, as always.
And we'd love to hear from you. Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. That's fantastic. Thank you to everyone who recommends it. That's great. And thank you for listening. And we'll be back with you next week.
Cheese!